Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/news-ad-free. That's amazon.com/news-ad-free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Across the UK, online and on DAB, the independent republic of Mike Graham on Talk Radio.
More blasted rhetoric from the Banana Republic for people who think capital punishment isn't going nearly far enough.
Dangerous mid-morning debate with the great dictator.
The independent republic of Mike Graham on Talk Radio.
Good morning and welcome to the Independent Republic of Mike Graham right here on Talk Radio. The sun is shining once again as a new dawn is breaking over the nation. After Theresa May's intervention yesterday, everyone on all sides of the Brexit debate has been cowed into submission. Her revelation that there is now more than ever a likelihood that nothing will actually happen on March the 29th has had the combined effect of sending even the most rabid Brexiteers into a slumber from which they may never wake up. And it has completely neutered any plans emanating from Jeremy Corbyn and Labour. The Prime Minister has literally bored us into a state of surrender. Meanwhile, fires burn on Saddleworth Moor and earthquakes have hit Surrey overnight. It's as though nature knows something we don't. We'll be finding out exactly what the day in Parliament holds later on. There are a number of votes taking place, but we decided they're not important enough to merit our presence in the tent of shame on College Green. We might go down there when it gets a bit colder. As ever, we'll be taking your calls, though. And for anyone who didn't get on yesterday, now is your chance. 0344 499 1000. First up today, though, we're going to talk about payday loans and compensation. Apparently, there are hordes of people still waiting for compensation because they were missold loans by Wonga, which went into administration last August. The company is now being accused of damaging customers from beyond the grave. But are they really? I'd like to hear your stories today, because I don't quite understand why anyone who is forced into borrowing money from these ghastly operators decides that they need compensation of some kind. I just don't get it. 0344 499 1000. Coming up later on, we'll be finding out what is going on between India and Pakistan and whether we should be concerned, and why a hotel in Scotland is in trouble for teaching men how to do domestic chores. You're listening to me, Mike Graham, right here on Talk Radio.
The Independent Republic of Mike Graham on Talk Radio.
Now, I'm delighted to say that for the first time this week, we are not kicking off the show with anything to do with Brexit. You might wonder why we're not doing it. I'll tell you why we're not doing it, because Theresa May basically operated yesterday like the dead hand of somebody trying to kill off a story. In the news business, we call it the news killing a gene, and she certainly has it. She's able to completely and utterly destroy any news that she doesn't want to come out. And basically, she is going to dull us all into submission so that we're all going to be walking around zombie-like saying, we just don't care anymore. We just don't care. But we do care, of course, and we will be getting onto it a little bit later on this morning. Now, I want to kick off with a story which slightly disturbs me, and it may be because I don't quite understand what is going on. Wonga was one of the many payday loan companies that were riding very high in this country 2 or 3 years ago. They were riding so high that they actually sponsored Newcastle Football Club to an extent where many of the people who were supporters of Newcastle said, these are not the sort of people we want to be doing business with. But they were charging ridiculous amounts of interest, thousands of percentage points. Every time somebody borrowed 100 quid, it turned into a debt of £1,000 sometimes. An awful lot of people got caught up in it. An awful lot of people ended up borrowing money from these people at horrendous interest rates and finding themselves incapable of paying it back. They went into administration last August, right? And it turns out that the Ombudsman has been given about 10,500 cases to look at to decide whether people are in need of compensation. What I don't understand is why they are in need of compensation. So we want to hear your stories today. If you're involved in this, if you've been involved with a payday loan company, even if they are still out there and they are still lending money at not such ridiculous interest rates, but we want to hear your stories, please. 0344 499 1000. We're also going to get some advice from, of course, the money magpie, Jasmine Birtles. Jasmine, a very good morning to you. Welcome.
Hello, hi.
I'm very well indeed, Jasmine. Thank you very much for coming on the show. What is it about these payday loans that sort of trigger compensation in the first place?
Well, what it is that, you know, as you say, it's up to you or me whether we take out a payday loan.
Yeah.
But payday loan lenders are supposed to check that you're able to pay back the loan before they lend to you.
Mm.
But of course, surprise, surprise, quite a few don't. And certainly Wonga regularly didn't. So you know, it's kind of a two-way street. You know, you could say, you could take a hardline view on this and say, look, we're adults. We make our own decisions. If you can't afford to pay it back, tough. Mm. But then on the other hand, we're not kind of dealing with a level playing field here. A lot of the people who go for payday loans, I would say the majority, are, you know, what are described as vulnerable people, which covers a multitude of sins, really. You know, it could be people genuinely with mental health issues. It could be people who just, you know, haven't been taught the basics. And that's, you know, let's face it, a lot of us in this country haven't been taught the basics of money management.
But surely as well, Jasmine, it's people who are living beyond their means for one reason or another. And I take your point that some people may be more vulnerable than others. And obviously, if people with mental health problems are going to payday loan companies borrowing vast amounts of money, then there's something wrong with the system. But I would imagine, of the 10,500 people here who are waiting to see whether they can get compensation, they must be all people who were living beyond their means in one way, shape or form.
In many ways, yeah. But then again, you know, you can argue that for many of them, it's not their fault. They're on universal credit. Apparently 60% of payday loan people who take out payday loans are using it to pay their bills. Mm. You know, so if you're taking out payday loans to pay your bills, yeah, you really do have a problem. And a lot of the time, I've been saying to people, right, go to one of the debt advice charities, go to Citizens Advice, go to National Debt Line, one of those, and they will actually help you to budget. Because if you are at that stage, then you really do need help in actually budgeting, managing money, and maybe you need to get some emergency funding if there is anywhere near.
Mm. Well, I'm looking at some interesting stats here because obviously people have been doing investigations into this for a while. The Financial Conduct Authority in 2017 put out what they said was the profile of a payday loan borrower. Inevitably male, around about 35 years of age, average income of around about £20,400, which is obviously below the national average. 76% of borrowers have no savings. The rest have an average of less than £200. And 68% were struggling to pay their bills. Now, what it tells me is that, one, their bills are obviously higher than they should be, or two, they've got more bills than they can afford to pay, so they need to lose some of them.
Absolutely. And you know, this is you would hope, what one of the debt charities would do to help that. You know, there's Christians Against Poverty again, also local credit unions that will help people budget. Mm. And you do also, of course, you know, on the under the sort of heading of kind of vulnerable, you do have people with addiction problems who will go to payday loan companies. And that is a big problem. You know, everything goes out of the window if you've got an alcohol addiction, if you've got a gambling addiction, drugs addiction. You know, budgeting really doesn't cut it. You need to get help with that.
Right.
And I think this is the thing that, if anybody's going to a payday loans company, they've got a problem, frankly, because it's, as you say, so ridiculously high cost.
And it presumably is the place of last resort. It's where people will go if they can't get a loan anywhere else.
It certainly should be. It certainly used to be. But then when Wonga came along and put so much money into advertising and made it seem so easy, people started to go there, you know, for easy loans that they could or should have got on a credit card.
Right.
People whose their credit rating wasn't actually too bad and they could have done it. So that was another problem. And as you say, while Newcastle football ground was going, you know, we're not keen on this. We're not, you know, the club wasn't keen at all on being connected with them because they were just, they're just taking the Michael, really, you know, just saying, oh, just come to us. It's lovely and easy. You know, we're your friends. We've got these funny little cartoon characters. So is that, I think that's another reason why Wonga was basically made an example of, and they were, you know, as you mentioned, it was the compensation companies who are also pretty dodgy on the whole, who brought Wonga really to its knees because they kept saying, you know, you should be.
Yeah, right. And what about this compensation package, as it were? I mean, the Ombudsman has been looking into these cases apparently for some time. The Treasury Committee is not happy about it, so the politicians are now getting involved. But how does it actually work? I mean, are these people looking for compensation in terms of their pain and suffering? Are they looking for compensation in terms of getting the interest back? What are they actually looking for?
Well, that's a good point. I think it's a mixture, actually. But yeah, certainly compensation, it's for them, for the payday loans company not going by the rules.
Mm.
So they're saying,
so what I'm saying is it's over and above what they may have borrowed and paid back. This is a sort of a settlement amount of money they're looking for.
Yeah, I think so. Yes, that's essentially what's being looked for. And the problem, as far as the financial compensation scheme is concerned, is that there isn't enough money to go around. That Wonga itself didn't have savings, like, you know, with a bank or that sort of thing. So they're having to look into, you know, where they get that actual compensation money from. They're essentially, you know, shrugging their shoulders and going, well, you know, you can ask for the compensation, but the coffers are bare. So, you know, you're going to have to go away again.
Yeah, right. So, I mean, in terms of payday loans in general and what the landscape is like, I've got a vague recollection somewhere in the back of my mind that the government basically made it illegal for some of these companies to operate on such high levels of interest, and they weren't allowed to go above a certain percentage rate. I can't remember whether that's exactly right.
Yeah.
But so, I mean, there are still companies out there that are making these loans effectively.
Oh, very much so. And this is the tiresome thing, that, you know, you get the idea that Wonga's collapsed, you know, big news. You think, oh, good, payday loans have gone. That means high-cost credit has gone. No, not in the least. It's simply mutated. The world of high-cost credit is alive and well. And you can get, there are all sorts of loans companies. There are different loans operations going about. So high-cost credit, sadly, is very healthy. There are, to be fair, there are a few better solutions coming along. I met a company called Hasty Pay recently, which kind of offers not exactly payday loans, but it works with employers to enable people to get some of their pay early in the month,
right,
earlier in the month, at a very, very reasonable rate. So there, I think technology is going to make it less attractive for these high-cost credit companies to continue. But while we have a situation where we have a lot of people on universal credit, we have a lot of people who have no idea how to manage their money, we have rising problems of addiction, there is going to be a demand for high-cost credit, credit that, you know, for people who can't get credit elsewhere. And this, I think, is going to be a continuous problem in this country for quite a while.
Yeah, it really will be, because we hear all the time that more and more people are going into more and more debt. Obviously, I'm trying to desperately avoid using the B word in this first hour today, but a lot of people are thinking that they're maybe going to stockpile stuff, or they're going to go into more debt, and they're going to worry about, you know, not being able to afford things after Brexit actually happens. Mm-hmm. So people are spending money, aren't they?
Oh, absolutely. And yeah, just as you said that, I was about to say the dreaded B word, and I agree, because it looks like, if we crash out, or even if we don't just crash out, if we just leave, prices are going
people
to go
get very
up
upset when you use those kinds of phrases. You have to be very careful these days. You can't say crash out, because it suggests that you're some kind of mad Remainer.
Oh, good grief, who'd want to be?
No, exactly.
I think there is a concern that people are going to be looking all over the place to get money to survive on a daily basis, because it's supposed to be food that will go up, medicines, these kinds of things. It's not your luxuries that people are bothered about. We as a nation, we need to get much more knowledge about how to manage our money. We need to have more affordable loans, and I think some, you know, emergency funding, particularly for single parents, because those are the ones that on the whole struggle the most.
Yeah, absolutely right. And as far as the way that debt is being structured in this country, in terms of the way that the interest rates are being held very, very low, I mean, we're hearing all sorts of things about the interest rates at the Bank of England really never going back up again, ever again. I mean, do you think that's likely?
Well, not in the short term, certainly. The point of keeping interest rates low is to help people borrow, and help businesses borrow and keep the money washing through the system. And certainly businesses don't need any extra costs that they can possibly have at the moment, and they need consumers to spend. I mean, this is the sad thing, that we actually do need to, as consumers, to spend. What we really need to be doing is selling abroad, getting some foreign money in. But at the moment, most of our economy is fueled internally. So we need more money washing around. And so if you keep interest rates down, the theory is, at least, that businesses will borrow, individuals will borrow, and that money keeps going round and round.
Right. And, I mean, as far as the credit card sort of companies are concerned, are people spending more money on credit now than they've ever done?
Well, as you know, I mean, the whole thing about digital money is moving very fast. You know, fewer and fewer people are using cash. So, yes, there's certainly more people are using credit cards. I think debit cards particularly, and, of course, mobile phone, mobile pay, those are being used. As for paying off the debts, that is gradually getting worse. There are people are not paying off credit card debts as quickly as they were. So that's a gradual thing. But certainly, yeah, I mean, we're all using credit cards and debit cards way more than we used to.
Mm. And so what will the sort of the Treasury Committee do, if anything, to try and speed all this up?
Yeah, it's a good point. I mean, at the moment, Nicky Morgan, who's head of the Treasury Committee, is basically complaining to the FSCS, and the FSCS, as I say, is essentially shrugging its shoulders and going, yeah, you know, where are we going to get the money? You know, what are we going to, how are you going to get that money to them? So I think it may be something that goes back and forth, but I'm not seeing a particularly positive outcome for those who still haven't been paid the compensation. It's a bit like, you know, when any company goes bust, if you are a creditor, you generally have to wait, and you generally get a very small amount of the money that you were expecting
right.
to get while it was going. I think it's that sort of situation.
Yeah, you're sort of at the back of the queue. Jasmine, thanks very much indeed. Jasmine Birtles there, finance expert, consumer journalist for moneymagpie.com. I'm still struggling to work out why exactly people who have borrowed money from some of these organisations, and Wonga in particular, are expecting compensation. I just don't think they should have it. It's all about another sort of abrogation of responsibility. If you borrow money, you should pay it back. If you can't afford to pay it back, you shouldn't have borrowed it in the first place. Surely that is one of the rules of life, isn't it? 0344 499 1000 is the number. This is Talk Radio.
The Human Zoo, where they don't hide away the sick animals.
The Independent Republic of Mike Graham.
On Talk Radio.
This is ground control to Major Tom. You've really made the grade.
You're listening to the Independent Republic of Mike Graham on Talk Radio in association with The Times. It's Politics Tamed, and we're going to be talking politics coming up in the next hour. David Wooding, political editor of The Sun on Sunday, is going to be joining us to tell us what is going to happen later on in the Houses of Parliament. Lots of voting going on, lots of amendments being put together. Where we are going to end up, we still don't really know. But let's take some calls now, because we've been talking about payday loans in the first hour and the problem of personal responsibility and borrowing money that you can't afford to pay back. Nicola is in York. Hi, Nicola.
Hello.
Very good morning to you. Thanks for calling. What would you like to tell us?
Well, I don't disagree with most of what you're saying, and I do think that compensation for the majority of people is definitely taking liberties, if you like, because they know what situation they get into. But I do know of a family who had to get one. They worked 0-hour contracts. They weren't living beyond their means, but they had contracts. He worked on a site somewhere, and he didn't get the hours that they needed to pay the rent.
Right.
So they felt they were in a situation they had no other choice. They took out a payday loan, thinking he could get extra hours. That didn't pan out, and they found themselves, the following the end of the month, I think it's a monthly thing, they couldn't pay it back. So when they went to speak to this loans company, they weren't prepared to negotiate like I imagine a normal bank would.
Right.
And what they insisted, and I'm going to say pushed upon them, was to take a second loan out to pay the first loan back.
Right.
And they felt they had no choice but to do that. And then the following month, they're in a similar situation. But at this point, they spoke to family and friends, and they're fortunate. And not everyone's as fortunate. They were fortunate enough to have been helped out. And they're not in that situation.
Right.
But for situations like that, you think about how many vulnerable families need to pay mortgage or rent, and they end up taking out one of these loans and can't afford to pay it back for whatever reason.
Yeah.
And it spirals then, and there doesn't seem to be a way to stop that happening unless you've got friends or family that can eventually,
sure. It's definitely a spiral of despair that you get stuck into. And I think one of the reasons that Wonga was particularly criticised was because it was kind of very aggressive in advertising what it did. And it didn't really explain what would happen if you couldn't pay the loan back.
And the sad fact is people in this situation wouldn't maybe listen to that anyway because they desperately need that money.
Yeah.
So they're prepared to take that risk.
And do you know why they were so in debt in the first place? I mean, when you say they were living beyond their means, what? I mean, I take the point that they weren't making enough money, but what were they spending it on?
They weren't living beyond their means. They were a low-income family with three children, all of a young age, constantly growing. They didn't actually have Sky. I've been listening to the chat that goes on. They didn't have any of these. They didn't drive.
But they would, if they were a low-income family, they would get money they would get benefits, wouldn't they?
Not if you're at that £20,000 threshold. That takes you over and above what you need to get benefits. From what I know, I'm not an expert, but from what I understand, they didn't get a lot. They got a little bit of help, but not a lot.
Yeah, but I mean, that's why I always wonder about in this country, because there is a safety net in this country for you if you don't have much money. And so, you know, there really isn't any excuse for having to go to them. I mean, you've told a very sympathetic story, Nicola, and I don't doubt that you're absolutely sincere in that. But, you know, there's always somebody who's going to say, well, I haven't got enough money, so I need to borrow some.
You're not wrong. There absolutely is. There's lots of people like that, but there are genuine cases.
Mm.
You know, and when these companies aren't prepared to help you out and aren't prepared to come to a payback term, if you like, that a high street lender would, then you are forced into the situation. And there is a pressure from these companies to take out more loans.
Yeah. No, you're absolutely right. And I would like to take this opportunity to say to people, don't borrow money from these opportunist, ghastly people, because they will never do you any favours.
I know, but it's easy for us to say, isn't it, when we're not in that situation?
Well, listen, I've spent many periods of my life without very much money. You know, I've been there, and you know, I've always managed to sort of get by without having to go to loan sharks, without having to go anywhere else to borrow money, which is going to take me into a bad area. And I think maybe we need to educate people better, maybe from school, about this kind of stuff.
Oh, I totally agree. You know, children are leaving school without the basics, and unfortunately, your parents don't manage money well.
No.
You're not taught how to do that from an early age. I know my daughter, the very first apprenticeship job she got, we made a book percentage into premium bonds.
Right.
So she understood that, you know, that you have to save. You've got to work hard, you know, and save in order to live.
Mm.
But unfortunately, not everybody is in that situation.
No, they're not. Very good call, Nicola. Thank you very much indeed for making it. Nicola in York telling us the other side of the coin from the point of view of a family who just weren't able to make ends meet for one reason or another. But the answer is never to go to one of these payday loan companies, I promise you.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
The Independent Republic of Mike Graham on Talk Radio.
Theresa May, writing in the new Euro-friendly Daily Mail, says, yes, we will leave the EU with a deal if MPs hold their nerve. Now, she's certainly holding her nerve, but let's find out from David Woody if it's actually working. David, very good morning to you.
Morning, Mike.
So, I mean, I'm sorry to sound as if I'm a bit bored by what she did yesterday, but she kind of killed all the news off in one fell swoop, which is quite an achievement, really.
There's no greater symbol for what has happened than the fact that Mike Graham and his team have deserted, have packed up their tent and left the Green opposite Parliament.
Well,
when I saw you guys packing up yesterday afternoon, I thought, that's it, it's all over, Brexit is finished.
It is. I mean, we'll be back on March the 12th, though, and make no mistake, for the meaningful vote. But until then, there's not much point in being down in the tent of shame for us, because only then, when we enter it, do we know that something is happening.
Yes, it's all been, she's turned kicking the can down the road into an art form with Theresa May.
Right.
And what's happened now, you know, we're just entering spring. You were talking about the balmy weather. I mean, it'll be cracking the flags by the time we leave Brexit, or we might be back into winter again.
Yeah.
It, well, well, it, this decision yesterday means, just to recap for your listeners in case they've lost the will to live and switched off, it means that she's not... If they don't accept her deal next time it's put before the Commons in a couple of weeks' time, not today as we thought it might be, then they will get a second vote the day after on whether or not to leave without a deal. Now, they're certain to vote no to that. And on the third day, they'll get the option to extend Article 50 beyond March the 29th. Right. She says for a short term. The difficulty of that, Mike, is to do that, she needs the European Union to accept... all 27 other states and the European Commission to accept that that's acceptable. Now, there might be some problems with Spain there, who want some mischief making over Gibraltar, right, and even the Irish. But if they do that, there's certain to be there's two possibilities here. One is that they'll say it's got to be for 2 years, in which case, you know, that means we're heading into second referendum territory and another couple of years of uncertainty. But if they do it until June, it still, as Theresa May says, doesn't remove the dreaded cliff edge, because they'll have to do something in 3 months. And the big question is, why do they want to extend it for 3 months? What are they going to do in 3 months? Are they going to get much of a better deal in that time? And if not, what happens if they don't? Do they back the deal, or do they...
Well, that's the point. I mean, it seems to me that she's trying so hard to kind of please everybody that she's basically twisting herself into a kind of impossible position. You know, it's like a kind of, you know, permanent game of Twister that never ends. She's, or, you know, just as she thinks she's assuaged one side, she suddenly has to go and assuage another side. And, you know, she can't keep doing that. All the sort of hard Brexiteers in the Tory party are saying, look, don't just tell people to hold their nerve. Actually hold your own nerve and keep no deal there and stop messing about.
Yes, one suspects there isn't really a game plan here. Yeah. One of my colleagues likened it to the chap who climbed up the big sheer cliff face in Yosemite National Park the other week.
Right.
Theresa May is basically doing that. She's climbing up without a rope. But in the case of the guy who did it, he spent about 2 years mapping out where he was going to go before he attempted to do it. She's got halfway up and is now saying, where's my next foothold? Where's my next handhold? And you guess that it's we're just doing this as we go along. Right. And then when she hits a stumbling block, she finds a way around it. But it never gets to the point where we think, oh, here's the solution. This is what's going to happen. They're going to back the deal. Having said that, Mike, there is a possibility that this is focusing minds in a number of ways. Mm. One, the Brexiteers will see the extension of Article 50. That's something they fear most. That means they always hope that if they keep blocking the deal, we get towards March the 29th, and then we leave without a deal, which is the purest of pure Brexit, as they see it. The second referendum people just want to keep extending it and stopping Brexit. That's why they're voting against the deal. Now, if the Brexiteers think that this could be a long extension, or in fact extend it by 3 months, and we end up staying in and having a second referendum, or we get more log jams, more problems, they might be swayed to say, let's just bite the bullet and back this deal. And I think it then hinges on Geoffrey Cox, the Attorney General. If he can come back with a possible addendum to the backstop, which removes the necessity for Britain to stay without any opt-out in the European Union institutions in the event of not finding a solution to the Irish border problem, then that might just get it over the line.
Mm.
And you know, like us, the MPs are worn down with this. We journalists, you know, we've cancelled our winter break holidays because we thought Brexit was going to happen, and now we can't get away till the end of June. So it's the same thing.
Totally ridiculous. And then, as if the one hand doesn't know what the other hand of government is doing, this ridiculous report comes out today in which they say citizens have ignored warnings to check their passports and driving licence. They're worried that there's going to be panic buying. They're saying that firms are not ready for a no deal. Well, maybe it's because nobody's taking them seriously. You know, it may well be that people are not as panic stricken as the Remainers and the government would like us to think we are.
I think that's the case. I mean, I did a story in The Sun on Sunday a couple of weeks ago. We slipped out on a Friday night at about 6 o'clock.
Mm.
The European Union put out some details about how the planes would continue to fly in the event of a no-deal Brexit. And remember, that was one of the biggest scare stories we had, that all the planes would be grounded. And there was a tit-for-tat agreement that they said if we did it for the European planes, they would allow our planes to carry on flying as normally. And the same for lorries. HGV vehicles would be able to go on the continent's roads, providing we allowed them to come onto our roads. So, you know, a lot of these things they can threaten and shout and mount scare stories, but in reality, the world will keep going. That, not to say that does, there will be some possible problems.
Of course.
You could have customs checks which could create some tailbacks, and there could be shortages of some foods that we import from Europe if there's a bit of panic buying. But I think most people.
But it's called life, Dave, isn't it? I mean, sometimes you get to Gatwick Airport and your plane doesn't take off because there's a problem with the engine, or there's a drone flying about which keeps you there for 48 hours. I mean, life goes on.
Yes, and I think most people really have just switched off about this now.
Yeah.
They just the attitude I hear from so many people is, look, we voted, that was a decision, whether I've agreed with it or not. Why can't they just get on with it? And I think there's a bit of frustration with MPs that they're making it all so difficult that they can't agree. I mean, if you start actually splitting down the agreements, it's not just a case of 52-48 like we are in the nation of people who vote to leave and people who voted for remain. Within the MPs, you get the people who want to leave, I've got all sorts of different ideas of what Brexit should be like. And the people who voted Remain have got different attitudes. Some want a second referendum, some want to stay inside the single market and the customs union, some think we should just ignore what the people said and overrule it. I know there's so many different factions in there that to get a group of these MPs in what is already a divided parliament politically, it's just impossible.
Well, that's right. And I've always said all along, I don't think you could find two people in the entire nation who actually have the same idea of what Brexit should be and what it is that they want to happen, because everybody's got a different view. And the trouble with the way Parliament's operating at the moment is they're trying to make it seem as though they can all agree on one particular version, and they can't. So they just have to accept a version, whether they agree with it or not.
And this is why I have this sneaking suspicion that she might just, through the war of attrition, have worn them down enough and said, it's my deal, it's no deal, or it's no Brexit. And she said that all along. But I have to say, the other thing she said all along, and I think I think she said it about 80 or 90 times, is we are leaving on March the 29th.
We are now clearly not leaving on March the 29th, right? I mean, that ain't happening. Funnily enough, I've been coached into, or shoehorned into doing a debate with Matt Kelly at the Groucho Club on April the 1st, Fool's Day. Now, you may wish or may not wish to attend, but as I said to him, well, I hope there's still some food left to eat at that point in time, because I don't think anything will have happened by the 1st of April.
No, I mean, if what you read in his paper, The European, the Ramona's favourite publication.
Yeah. Ramona's Gazette.
He will have set up an underground bunker and stocked it full of baked beans.
Well, exactly right. Now, as a sort of an overarching view, because I'm always interested in what you think about these things. I was away last week. People said to me, oh, well, you missed one of the biggest weeks in British politics. You know, the whole two-party system was blown apart by this formation of the independent group. I don't think it's that significant, do you?
Well, it is for the Labour Party, but I don't think it's going to take off in the way some people predict. Let's be straight. It's a Remainer party, and I think the three Conservatives joining damaged Labour in as much as you had eight or nine Labour MPs, nine left, one didn't join them, but we had eight Labour MPs who left the Labour Party to form an independent group. They were joined by three Conservatives. A lot of ordinary people will think, this is a more moderate group, because it's taking from both sides, and I get that. But on top of that, you have the fact that the only thing which binds them together is that the three Conservatives are die-hard Remainers.
Mm.
They are stop Brexit people. They are Brexit wreckers. And that's the one thing they have. So they've got to be very careful that they're not seen as the anti-Brexit party.
Yeah.
Because once Brexit is delivered, that's the end of it for
then
them.
Then they've got nowhere to go. Yeah, that's the problem, isn't it?
What's interesting is, I did a piece on an old Parlings partner of ours from many years ago, Mike, Derek Hatton, in the paper on Sunday.
Degsy, that went well, didn't it?
Degsy was in the Labour Party, taking Liverpool to the brink of bankruptcy, and the Labour Party then, in the 1983, was run by a very left-wing leader, Michael Foot.
Yeah.
And it's now run by a left-wing leader in Jeremy Corbyn. Liverpool were top of the league at the time, they're top of the league again now. And then you had Derek Hatton in the Labour Party. So, and you had an independent group being formed in the SDP.
Right.
And now you've got this independent group. So there's, it's like life on Mars. We've turned the clock back a little bit. But let me just explain about the about this new group and the difference between that and the SDP. So the SDP, which left the Labour Party during those years of the hard left in the 1980s, had four big hitters, the Gang of Four, all of whom had served, not in a shadow cabinet, but in a cabinet, in government. David Owen, the Foreign Secretary, Shirley Williams, a legendary figure, who was Education Secretary, and Roy Jenkins, the former Home Secretary, and then, of course, there was Bill Rogers, the fourth member of that group. They were all big players who set up this party. And what happened? It sort of it failed in the Warrington by-election, but then won its first seat in Crosby when Shirley Williams became their first MP. But in the end, they didn't quite make it and had to join up with the Liberal Party to form the Liberal Democrats. So you know, with
but they did damage to the party they left, didn't they?
Yes, exactly. Mm. They did, and of course, this. These were four giant figures, four enormous political people with political experience. You look at the 11 who've moved over there. Okay, Chuck is regarded as a talented MP, but he hasn't really done anything. He's not been in. He's not held offices of state, and it's not quite in the same level as the SDP. So the question is, if they couldn't do it, then. What's the chance of this lot doing it? But, you know, politics is a very, very strange thing. And a week is a long time in politics, and 2 years is an even longer time when you're watching Brexit.
Well, it really is. And finally, I mean, that brings us to Chris Williamson, because, of course, the Labour Party still is in a very weird place. You've got Tom Watson, the deputy leader, who practically is not on speaking terms with the leader, Jeremy Corbyn, who's very matey with Chris Williamson. Williamson in trouble for what he said at a Momentum meeting up in Sheffield, I think it was, where he was talking about how the Labour Party has been too apologetic over anti-Semitism. Watson's calling for him to have the whip withdrawn. I mean, you know, they get themselves into more trouble for nothing, really, don't they?
Yeah, they can't help themselves because it's tribal politics at its worst. You know, anything anybody says about the Labour Party, according to Chris Williams, is automatically wrong. And he just won't have it that there is a problem with anti-Semitism, clearly from what he said.
Yeah.
So it's a very difficult to it just adds to this row which has been going on for some time that you know is damaging the party and particularly among the Jewish community. Don't forget, of course, we'll have a former Labour MP today who was jailed for her part in the.
Oh yeah, she should be welcomed back with open arms, right?
Yes. This is Fiona Onasanya, who became the first MP who was jailed. She's now been released from prison after a month behind bars. She was lying about a speeding ticket, which is why she was jailed for perverting the course of justice. She will become the first MP to cast a vote while wearing an electronic tag this evening. So
amazing. Absolutely, ridiculous, isn't it? I mean, to be fair, the Labour Party have kicked her out of the party, but no, it seems incredible that the Houses of Parliament can't stop her from coming back, and she's still drawing down an MP's salary.
Yeah, it's the shamefacedness of her. You know, you'd expect her to do the decent thing and resign, but that's the way it is at the moment. We're not in normal period of politics.
No, we really aren't.
The Three Amigos Part 2, not the three who left the Tory party, but the three who came out last week and openly defied the Prime Minister in an op-ed in the Daily Mail. We're talking about Amber Rudd, David Gork, and Greg Clark. In normal times, those three would have been fired immediately, but just shows the strange...
Well, I mean, I put out a tweet last week, you know, Amber Rudd, who failed as Home Secretary, David Gork, who failed in his first act to bring in a sort of judicial review of the black cab rapist. I mean, and these are not heavy hitters, in my view, at all.
Well, it just shows how weak Theresa May is.
Yeah.
Who is running the country? Who is running the cabinet? Right. Who is running Brexit? It's very hard to know at times.
And what's going to happen tonight? Because a couple of votes are coming in, and there's a couple of amendments going on. But I'm a bit unclear as to what is actually going to be withdrawn and what is actually going to be tabled.
Well, it's unlikely there will be. It's going to be a momentous night tonight because there will be a sort of normal statement issued by the government, a sort of proposals which will say we're going to try and get a deal next time round. Then there's the Yvette Cooper amendment,
right,
which is to try and extend Article 50 and so forth, which more or less has had the steam taken out of it by what Theresa May announced yesterday.
Right.
And then, of course, you've got Jeremy Corbyn's an amendment, which is to stay in the customs union and linked to the single market. And if that fails, he says he will then go towards a second referendum. Which brings me on to another point, Mike, is that amid all the chaos and confusion in the government, mustn't forget that on Brexit, the Labour Party isn't much better.
Right.
They're all hopelessly divided, and there's absolute anger about the decision in some quarters of the Labour Party to back a second referendum.
Right.
And I think that's probably been done as a reaction to these Remainers leaving the party to form their own party and to stop others leaving. But all it might do is drive away some of those MPs who feel that they won't be delivering on the referendum result.
No, quite.
Your smile, bring me laughter all the while. In this world where we live, there should be more happiness. So much joy you can give to each brand new bright tomorrow.
You're listening to the Independent Republic of Mike Graham right here on Talk Radio in association with The Times. Politics are tamed. We'll be taking your calls on the political situation coming up later on in the next hour. Because right now, we've got a rather special guest. We're going to talk to Dr. Chris Steele, MBE, who is, of course, the This Morning Doctor. He's going to be telling us why 50% of us apparently suffer from vitamin D-related ailments, including fatigue, depression, chronic pain and weakness. Dr. Chris, a very good morning to you.
Good morning, mate.
Thank you very much for joining us. I know you're a busy man. What's this all about and how come we've only just discovered it?
Well, we haven't just discovered it. The situation is vitamin D has become a very hot topic in the medical world.
Right.
And years ago, we knew that, you know, vitamin D deficiency caused rickets, bone disease in children, and certainly was vital for teeth.
Yeah.
So we know it's been important for bones and teeth, but now we're learning that vitamin D is almost vital to every cell in the body.
Right.
And low levels, of course, you know, implicated in heart disease, cancers, infections, arthritis, so many diseases. Mm. It's quite an exciting area of medicine.
Right. Now, we weren't just playing Bring Me Sunshine song because you and I remember it, I have to say. We were bringing it because supposedly sunshine is a source of vitamin D, isn't it? So the more you're out in it, the better you are.
Yeah. You know, what's interesting, of all the vitamins, the body has its own factory to make vitamin D.
Right.
Now, doesn't that tell you something?
Yeah, it does.
It's its own factory for vitamin D, and the factory is your skin. So when you're outside, the skin's exposed to sunlight. The body produces vitamin D, which is then stored and then, of course, used in all the various systems of the body.
And is it stored for a long time? I mean, does it run out? I know that maybe sound like a stupid question, but how long can you store it for?
Well, I couldn't give you the exact answer, but it's a fat-soluble vitamin. So once it's made, it's stored in the fat in the body and is used up. Now, of course, you've got to store, but the thing is, you need to keep topping up that level of vitamin D.
Mm.
And the best way you can do it is by getting outside. But unfortunately, you know, we're not getting out as much as we could. We're sitting on our backsides on computers and games, etc., etc. So it's important to try and encourage people to get out in the fresh air, out in the sunshine.
Well, it's interesting, isn't it? Because a lot of people now go to gyms. I mean, I know loads of people at work who, you know, finish work and, oh, I'm off to the gym. And, you know, they could be, instead of going to a gym to do what it is that they do, then they could they not do that outside?
Well, look, yeah, they go to the gym. You know, it's expensive to join. The gear is expensive. And what are they doing? They're exercising inside, not in sunlight.
Right.
Come on, look. If you want to get real benefit, do some simple walking out of doors.
Go out
the front door. You're in the sunlight. And, you know, the recent survey by Go Outdoors, a survey of 2,000 adults, I mean, just showed you that 71% of people spend less than 1 hour outside in the winter. And 40% said that walking for 30 minutes was too long for them.
Really?
Yeah.
That's crazy, isn't it?
It is. What a nutty.
I mean, I used to laugh. I lived in New York a few years ago, and I used to laugh at all the people doing going into Stairmasters in a gym when they lived in high-rise apartment blocks. I thought, well, if you just went up and down the stairs, you wouldn't have to join the gym at all.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah. And look, you know, I retired from my practice now, but most of my patients couldn't afford fancy gym fees.
No.
I would just say to them, look, you need, and I wouldn't use the word exercise. It's a dirty word. Mm. I would say, I want you to go out for a 10-minute walk each day. Now, what I meant was walk out for 10 minutes, then you've got to come back.
Right.
So it's actually a 20-minute walk.
Mm.
But if I had said, I want you to do a 20-minute walk, they'd say, oh, no, I can't be bothered.
No.
It's raining, you know, et cetera.
Right, exactly right. And people use their cars so much more now. I mean, you know, I've got kids at school, and hardly any kids now walk to school in the way that perhaps you and I did. You know, they're getting lifts from their parents. They get picked up on the way home, you know. Yeah. I mean, I used to walk about, I think, 4 miles a day when I was going to school, because I had a mile to the tube station, a mile at the other end, and then the same back. And, you know, that doesn't seem to be happening anymore.
No, it's not. I mean, I did even more than that, but that's the situation that we're in. And even the schools now, they're selling the playing fields for developers,
yeah.
You know, so it's a very sad situation. Mm. And really, you know, what bothers me from a medical point of view is, you know, not exercising enough, not getting the vitamin D levels. You know, you are at increased risk of killer diseases.
Right. I was going to say, if you're listening, if somebody's listening to this now, they think they might have a vitamin D deficiency. How can you tell? What sort of symptoms would they have?
Well, the symptoms are sort of, you know, vague. Muscular weakness, tiredness, fatigue, low mood.
Right. Well,
they're not dramatic symptoms, but they're the symptoms of the early signs of your vitamin D levels dropping.
Mm.
And if you know you're not getting out in daylight for more than 30 minutes a day, maybe you've got a vitamin D deficiency. You can discuss this with your doctor.
Yeah.
There's a simple blood test the doctor can do. If that comes back showing you've got low vitamin D levels, he can prescribe vitamin D for you.
Okay.
Yeah.
So you can actually take it in sort of a pill form, because I remember as a kid my mother used to give me something called Haliborange.
That's it.
Now I don't know if that was the same thing, but I think it was kind of an orange juice. People always assume has got vitamin D in it, right?
No, yeah, but it was orange juice mixed with virtually fish liver oil, halibut liver oil.
That was another thing we used to get, cod liver oil, which is disgusting.
Ditto, eh? We lived in the same era.
I think so.
Yeah.
So I mean, is that stuff still out there? Can you still give all that to your kids if you want to?
Yeah, it's still out there. And, you know, there are vitamin D supplements that are aimed for children, recommended for babies and children.
Mm.
So it is. It's a very important vitamin, as it were. It's not a mineral, but these are vital. So certainly, you know, I mean, I've got my own GP. I know
right.
It sounds silly, but...
You should have, shouldn't you? I mean, you can, yes. Your physician heal thyself is all very well, but can't always do that, can you?
I wouldn't trust me as a doctor, good God. I got fatigue and just... I thought I was just getting old. And he did my vitamin D levels and they were low, and he gave me a high-dose vitamin D capsule to take.
Right, okay.
Yeah.
And so this is a study conducted by Go Outdoors. So the basic principle seems to be that even if it's not that nice out, even if it's not that sunny, you should still be going out and you will get the benefit of that.
Yeah, try and get out for 20 to 30 minutes a day, every day, come rain or shine. There's no such thing as bad weather, it's just bad clothing.
Mm, no, quite exactly right. Well, also, there's a lot of great clothing that you can buy. And, I mean, as far as the 50% of Brits that are suffering from these particular ailments, I mean, that's a big number of people.
Yeah, it is. And other studies have actually shown that 50% and even higher people have official low levels of vitamin D when measured. So, you know, the problem is out there. It's not being identified. It's not being addressed.
And is there any type of food that you can eat? I mean, we mentioned orange juice, but I mean, is fruit particularly high in it? I mean, is there anything else you can do to up the levels?
Yeah, I mean, forget the orange juice. The halibut orange you mentioned was orange juice mixed with.
Right, okay.
Halibut liver oil. It's a fish liver oil. So oily fish.
Right.
It's a good source of vitamin D.
So is that like sort of stuff like fish in a tin, like sardines and stuff like that?
Well, that will do, but any of the oily fish, salmon, tuna.
Okay.
Then you've got the liver, eggs are a source as well, and there are fortified spreads. You know, there's certain margarines and butters have fortified with vitamin D. So, but I would rather you look have that in your diet, but try and get out because you're getting the exercise and the sunlight.
Okay, brilliant stuff. Well, listen, Dr. Chris, thank you very much indeed telling us all about why you need to get outside and actually do more activity. And when it's weather like this, you have to say, it's not very difficult to do.
Across the UK, online and on DAB, the Independent Republic of Mike Graham on Talk Radio.
If you enjoyed that, be sure to catch the whole show 10 to 1, Monday to Friday on Talk Radio, via DAB, online or via the Talk Radio app. If you have an opinion on the stories we cover, we'd love to hear from you. Call us 0344 499 1000 or tweet at Talk Radio during the show to have your say.
The Independent Republic of Mike Graham on Talk Radio.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.